Welcome to UN Gender Focus. I'm Deanne Penn at United Nations headquarters in New York. Coming up in this week's program, a call for more visibility of Muslim women in the media, and how the transgender community in Bangladesh, known as the Hijra, shows us how gender is not just black and white. But first, gender parity for leadership roles in public life across the world is still decades away, according to the head of the UN Development Programme, UNDP. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, Helen Clark said that the slow pace of progress towards a position where top jobs are held equally between men and women was unacceptable. Susan Myers, Senior Vice President at the UN Foundation, asked Ms. Clark if the United Nations and other institutions were pushing hard enough on gender equality.
Gender equality is a huge issue for me. I'm one of a generation of post-war baby boomers in a Western country who had to fight their way through the glass ceiling. And obviously glass ceilings are still there. We don't need to give the examples. They're pretty obvious. It's a little concerning to see the evidence now that women at the very top level of political leadership, head of state, head of government, numbers peaked in 2011, but they're now back at 2009 levels. So we're still in a situation where women in leadership are the rare thing. And until you really broaden that base right through the parliaments, right through the society, where it's the normal thing that women hold 50% of the places, we're not going to get up to gender parity. We are decades away from gender parity on the evidence we're seeing at the moment. And I don't think women should accept that. It is not good enough. I really think we do have to band together and bring in the male allies for saying this glass ceiling has to be charged through.
Here's to that. But we're, of course, here at SDG Live talking about the Sustainable Development Goals. Can you focus a little bit on how this issue of gender equality matters with this new agenda of the SDGs that the world has endorsed? And what are some of the other key drivers of achieving the SDGs by 2030?
Well, you can't achieve this agenda if you leave people behind. And that is why one of the key premises of it is leave nobody behind. Now, that means women. It means all sorts of other people who are left behind right now as well, marginalized for a wide range of reasons. But how can you eradicate poverty if women are still poor? How can you achieve the education targets if women aren't part of it? So for me, the things that need to be done are pretty obvious and pretty simple. Girls have to be able to finish their schooling. Number one, if you can finish your schooling, you have so many other options open to you in life. Girls, women need access to sexual and reproductive health services. Universal. They have to have the same economic opportunities as men. And here's the rub. When the WEF does its gender gap survey, they are showing some slippage backwards on the economic empowerment as well. So we have 155 countries in the world where the World Bank identifies at least one law that discriminates against women in a way that is harmful for economic empowerment. This is not acceptable. So we have to systematically target these things. And I have to say that getting more women in top leadership positions in the governments and the cabinets and the corporations, leadership at all levels, this matters because those women can help drive the change.
Muslim women are especially prone to hate crimes and should become more visible in the media to make their voices heard. That's the view of Zarqa Nawaz, a filmmaker and writer who spoke recently at a UN forum on combating anti-Muslim discrimination and hatred. Ms. Nawaz told Andita Listiarini why Muslim women are more likely to fall victim to hate attacks.
I think a lot of Muslim women wear hijab, so we are visible. And just like Sikh men who wear turbans are visible and often mistaken for Muslims. And because Islamophobia is so rampant right now, and we have a president who's given sort of permission for people, particularly the right wing and white supremacists, to harm people who are considered the other, I think we're seeing higher rates of hate crimes against people who are considered, you know, different or basically who are Muslim.
What do you think that this kind of meeting can bring, you know, main takeaway?
I think that it's really, really highlighted the fact that Muslims are, you know, have the lowest approval ratings in American history, and that these are, you know, and that we're seeing more and more hate crimes and violence against mosques and people, and that we have to do something about it because we can't allow this to continue.
What do you think the UN can do differently to tackle this kind of problem, especially in dealing with the victims of abuse and discrimination?
I think that women have to become more visible. We have to write more, be involved in television, be involved in media, be involved in journalism. I think that we have to have people hear our voices, and we can't have other people representing us and telling our stories. If we want people to know who we are, then we have to be the authors of our own cultural expressions.
Now, as the Muslim woman yourself, how do you feel like when you see so many Muslim women are being oppressed?
I think that Muslim women are very strong, and I'm really hopeful that, you know, every day I hear about another Muslim woman who started another organization, who's written a book or a novel or a play, and I see more and more Muslim women going into the arts and expressing their stories on their own terms.
We've seen some progress, that implementation of anti-discrimination laws. What kind of changes do you think these laws will bring in the future?
I think we need laws. We need a lot of proactive engagement, because we can't have people think that they can just go and discriminately hurt people and have hate crimes and hate speech and nothing will happen and there's no recompense. You know, there's no transparency, that they need to know that they're going to be held accountable. And so we need laws to make sure that people realize that there's serious consequences to what they do.
Can you talk about the project that you're working on?
Well, I finished this television series. It aired on CBC television for 6 seasons, so there's 90 episodes. It's now available in the U.S. On Hulu, and I've just written my memoir, Laughing All the Way to the Mosque, which has just been released.
Can you tell me more about your book?
It's about growing up Muslim, and it's about my experiences of, you know, how difficult it was as a young child and going through all the processes of, you know, being a daughter of immigrants who have different expectations of you in terms of career and marriage, and having to deal with all that and the pressure of living in the West and still wanting to maintain your values and your identity as a Muslim woman.
Regardless of their gender identity, people need to be valued and included in development activities, according to a representative from UN Women in Bangladesh. Raising awareness about gender equality, Christine Hunter stated that gender is still understood as physically determined, leading to discrimination of the transgender community in Bangladesh, who are also called hijras. Priyanka Shankar has been speaking to Ms. Hunter.
In Bangladesh, the government officially recognized hijra as a third gender. The challenge has been that legal recognition in itself is never enough to change the actual day-to-day lives of people. The government tried to introduce a small quota for hijra in government employment, but it seems that they hadn't thought through all the steps involved then in people taking up those positions. So in the end, what happened is the hijra who applied were expected to prove they were hijra physically. So they were actually subjected to medical tests.
What about within the society? Are they considered as a taboo?
Hijra have an important cultural role. For example, blessings at weddings on newlyweds, blessings at the birth of a child. So they really have been part of celebrating important moments in people's lives. Yet, at an individual level, they experience really significant discrimination, lack of recognition, lack of support from their own families on through society. They are harassed on the street, abused. Gender is still very much understood as physically determined. Hijra, as well as other transgender communities, challenge that, and they bear the brunt of the discrimination as a result.
Lastly, what is the need of the hour for these hijras?
I think, first of all, it's not that the hijra need to integrate better into society, it's that we need to take steps to value people regardless of their identity and to include them in development processes and in the benefits of development. We need to challenge ourselves to understand gender differently, not just as a black and white, male, female, which doesn't reflect human experience at all.
You've been listening to UN Gender Focus from the United Nations in New York. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.